is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
On this episode of the Hoopheads podcast, Mike and I are joined by Dan Menigan of 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland to discuss the all-time All-NBA teams. We had such a great conversation and discussion throughout that we ended up talking for 2 hours and are going to split this episode over two podcasts. This episode is part one, and we will discuss our methodology and problems that we encountered while coming up with our lists. And we will also discuss who made our all-time All-NBA first team. We hope you enjoy this very special episode of the Hoopheads podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from 92.3 The Fan, Dan Menigan. Dan, welcome.
All right, so I got to bring this up. So Jay Billis, Fran Fischilla, Mark Price, Larry Nance, and then you drag me on here? Really couldn't get anybody better?
You know, hey, sometimes you got to scrape the bottom of the barrel when you're doing a special episode like this one. So, you know, it's all good. We're excited. I just told you guys before we jumped on here that, strangely enough, I might be more excited for this special edition podcast than anyone that we've done to this point. So for people out there, you may have read the episode title and show notes, but we're going to talk about the top 15 NBA players. We're going to put them into the three all-time teams, a first team, a second team, and a third team. And we've all semi-agreed to try to do it positionally. Now, my understanding is that there may have been a little bit of cheating, which we'll see as we go through each of the teams. I know each of us mentioned that we had a couple slots that we may not have stuck to the letter of the law, but we'll have to see how that goes. So anyway, we're going to throw it to you, Dan, with our first question, which is, as you sat down to actually do this exercise, what did you find to be the hardest part of trying to put together an all-time first team, all-time second team, all-time third team? What was the hardest part of that for you?
So the toughest thing I ran into was trying to figure out what to do with modern guys, what to do with the guys who are playing now, and how I, you know, use them, because the game has changed so much with the way that, of course, with sprawl ball and everything that's come out lately, where we've all realized that, hey, threes are worth more than twos. So it's trying to figure out, how do I take that and compare it to what Bob Pettit was doing in the beginning of the league and what Bill Russell was doing when there were eight teams in the league, compared to now where I've got guys like James Harden hitting 35 footers. And I thought that was the toughest thing that I ran into, was just balancing how much the game has changed compared to where we are today.
Yeah, going along with that, I know there was a story that came out this week where Daryl Morey said that clearly the statistics and analytics show that James Harden is a better scorer than Michael Jordan. And I got to be honest, I read the headline and I couldn't even read through the article to try
to even comprehend
his point. Just totally blew my mind away. So I agree. I think there's, when you look at what's happened here and when we tried to do this, the center position is the one that is completely just at odds with the way the game is now. And I think if you go back and you look, you can make a pretty good argument, and we'll see as we go through and do our teams, that you could easily probably include six centers maybe in the top 15 players of all time.
And you might, how about five, Mike?
Yeah, you might be able to get to you might be able to get to a seventh center. And I can honestly say that if you look and you project forward, if the rules of the game stay the way they are and there isn't some drastic change to bring center play back into it, you may never see another center ever even sniff the top 50 players in the league. There may never be another guy that plays the way the guys that we're going to talk about tonight play, simply because of, as you said, Dan, the way the game has changed so tremendously. And you're right, when you start looking at modern day players, it's difficult to see how they fit in to the history of the league, and kind of trying to figure out how those stats that guys are putting up today, how that compares to people in the past. And that was really, I think, a big challenge for me. And I know when I looked at it, I tended to overvalue players in the past and undervalue today's players, which I think will come through, and we all talk about our teams when we see what mine is. Jay, what about you? What would you find to be hard?
So I think, Mike, and you and I talked earlier today a little bit, because I was just kind of wanted to pick your brain for a second, but my biggest struggle was just trying to figure out like what I did positionally. And when I had people that when I originally wrote down the 15 names that immediately came to my mind, I was like, oh man, I have eight centers here. Like, I can't have eight centers on this list. I can't do that. Like, I can't justify it. You know, they're not. And along with that, where do the guy, like Mike, like Dan said, was where do the guys from today fit in? Because I was really struggling. Like, obviously, when we get to talking here, I think it's safe to say there's a certain someone that used to play for Cleveland Cavaliers that's going to be on our list. Okay, I didn't have a problem putting him in the list, but it was where are the rest of the guys in the league now? Like, maybe when we do this in 5 years and we sit down, you know, some of these other guys, and we'll talk about that. Maybe they'll be in the list and move someone else out of the list. But I really struggled and not including them because my scope, like you said earlier, was my scope of seeing players is much smaller than yours or anyone because we've only been alive since I've only been alive since 86. I think, Dan, what did you?
Well, I mean, my buddy put me through NBA boot camp when he found out that I was getting back into the league and he was an older guy who grew up with the league, and he legitimately pulled out an old box of just VHS tapes. And he was so offended at the fact that I never watched Bill Russell play. And he was so offended that I never saw Wes Unseld. And he was so offended that I never saw Dolph Schayes. And he would just pull out these tapes and be like, okay, here's the Willis Reed game. You're going to sit and watch this now. Okay, here's the... You know, all of these great players that have been forgotten. So I got a little bit more of a backing because I basically had to go through NBA boot camp.
And I think if I was a kid today and being able to watch stuff on YouTube, I think I would be way more like up to speed with these older basketball players. I mean, literally my view of anyone pre-82, Mike, is Book of Basketball by Bill Simmons and some random ESPN Hardwood Classics or whatever that they put on NBA TV. That's about it because I'll be honest with you, like, A, I don't really have the time to sit back and watch as much as I probably would like to. B, it's just I don't think that I was afforded the opportunity because I didn't really have anyone that, like, my parents weren't really big into basketball.
So. Yeah, neither were my folks, and it took my buddy Kevin to legitimately do that. And it's funny you bring that up with YouTube and all that kind of stuff because I coached a kid. I coached seventh grade ball. And I coached a kid who was like, yeah, I modeled my game after Karl Malone. I'm like, where in the heck have you watched Karl Malone? And he's like, yeah, you go on YouTube and that stuff and pull up the old Jazz games and watch him run pick and roll.
Not the Lakers, Karl Malone?
With John Stockton. God, Lakers, Karl Malone. Oh, my goodness. Him and Gary Payton, that was so sad at the tail end.
Yeah, it was, especially when they got spanked by the Pistons. That was just it was kind of apropos. It was kind of a good ending for the mailman. So I may be previewing another one of my biases there. But yeah, I think it's funny to go back and look at what we know about those players in the past. And I know just from hearing you guys talk there, even if you wanted to watch, let's say a ton of Wilt Chamberlain games or a lot of Bill Russell games, there just isn't a whole lot of stuff available to see. And then I think the other piece of it that always strikes me whenever I watch some of those games is you look at the level of athleticism, not necessarily of Wilt Chamberlain himself or Bill Russell himself or Jerry West himself, but you just look at the caliber of athlete that was on the, court with those guys. And, you know, you start to go, man, it just doesn't look or feel like even games from the 80s, let's say, you watch those games in the 60s and 70s, and they just don't look the same as, you know, sort of from the Bird Magic era up until now. I think the game has, you know, dramatically changed, obviously, with all the advances in training and just sleep and nutrition and analytics and everything that's gone into making guys better athletes today than they ever were. So what I tried to do when I was doing this is really try to keep it with, okay, what did they look like in their era? And you could probably also, if you're really talking about this as, you know, the all-time team, you could look at, well, which guys from these other eras could survive even in the state that they were in? Like, I think if you put 1961 Wilt Chamberlain in the NBA today, now granted, he plays a different style of basketball than what's there today, but just from a sheer athleticism standpoint, I don't think Wilt has any trouble fitting in to today's game. Whereas there may have been some other guys that don't. So I think that's an interesting way to look at things. And you just, again, we're kind of all going by the seat of our pants here. We're looking at statistics. We're p- pulling up some random clips. We're hearing what we've heard for our entire lives of different people talking about it. Maybe at some point we talked to somebody who was alive or was aware of those players and actually saw them play live. But for the most part, we're kind of trying to piece together all these little small bites of information. Whereas with guys today, obviously we spend tons of time watching today's players and we have a much more, we're much more familiar with their game. And I think it's, I'll be interested to see where you guys go with today's modern players compared to those guys in past eras as we kind of get, dig into the teams here.
Sounds good.
It's
going to
be fun, man. I'm in. Let's go.
All right. So one last thing before we do the teams. Here's what I found, too. This is another thing that I found to be difficult was positionally I found center to be easy almost to the point where there was too many guys, so made it maybe hard. Small forward was easy. I thought shooting guard was easy. The two spots I had the most trouble with across the three teams were power forward and point guard were the two spots that I had the most difficulty with, either because I couldn't find the right guys or I felt like there were a bunch of guys that kind of were in the same sort of same tier, and it was hard to separate out who was what. So when it got to that third team, it became really difficult to figure out who was going to be on it. So let's start. Do we want to start at the beginning with the first team, or do we want to work our way to the third?
I think
third
that team? Makes the most. I think this we should start with the first team because, like we talked about, I think most of our first teams are going to be fairly similar, and I think then we can get into the kind of the third team discussion. What does that sound?
That sounds good to me. All right, so let's go. I'll kind of act as the GM/host. And go to you guys. We'll go Dan, then Jason, then me, and we'll go through positionally. So let's start with point guard. Your first team all-time NBA point guard, Dan, is?
I mean, it's got to be Magic, right? I mean, it's a really –
That's who I have.
It's yep. Really – like, there are a lot of guys that fall into that category, and, of course, we're going to go down the line from there, and there's going to be a lot of guys that will come up later. But, I mean, it's Magic. He modernized the point guard position. He did it from being 6'8", 6'9". He figured out how to do it without shooting. He was the most brilliant passer we've ever seen. The Showtime Lakers are the few styles of basketball that could translate into today and work. I mean, it's got to be Magic. And if you want to point to something else, the dude played center in a finals game.
Right.
You know, when so, I mean, what more do you need out of a guy? I mean,
That's one of the most iconic games in NBA history against Philly there in the 1980 championship. He was amazing as a rookie. And, you know, I remember that game being 10 years old and he hugged Kareem, before, not in that game, but earlier in the playoffs when they won and Kareem just kind of looked at him like he was crazy because Kareem was obviously very stoic in his career and didn't show the type of emotion that Magic was clearly known for. And yeah, I don't think to me, it was a no brainer. Actually, I think four out of the five for me on this first team were no brainers. And Magic certainly as the point guard, yeah. No brainer.
Yeah. No brainer for me too. And here's the thing, Mike, he averaged a double double for his career, but he still somehow averaged 7.2 rebounds when you think Magic Johnson, you say, oh, he's a rebounder.
No,
right.
No, you know,
so, I mean, I know it was kind of the style of play that the Lakers played and whatnot in that era, but still the fact that he averaged 7 rebounds a game as a point guard for his career, not even for a season, for his career. I mean, and we'll get to another guy on this list, but he's very close to someone that we are very familiar with in rebounds for his career and who's much better known for rebounding in his, like, as one of his things.
Right. And to Dan's point, he just played that position at a size that had never been seen before.
Yep.
And that size gave him a huge advantage, just being able to see over people and being able to do the things that he could do at that size. But it also allowed him to be a tremendous rebounder, which just was another way for him to contribute and be, you know, an asset to his team and really do what he needed to do to help the Lakers win titles. And he won 5, made 12 all-star teams, 9 times first team All-NBA, 1 time second team All-NBA. I mean, I think it's clear there's, to me, That was very, very, very clear cut. So Magic, point guard, all-time NBA team. Next, shooting guard.
I think this is universal, too.
Larry Hughes?
I'll say it, Michael Jeffrey Jordan. I mean, right. His royal airness himself. I mean, he was my favorite player to watch growing up. His game would translate to any era on the face of the planet. He would be beyond dominant for it. And mind you, this is all, by the way, for what he did on the court. We're not getting into his ownership status for the Charlotte Hornets and how he's run that into the ground, because I don't have enough time to whine about Nick Batum. So right.
Absolutely.
He was unbelievable. He was a master on the offensive end. He was above the rim and then evolved to below the rim as his career went on. His defense, which is what everybody forgets, his defense was stifling. He was one of the best defenders that ever walked onto the floor. And he just it sounds stupid, and I live in an analytical world and that stuff, but the dude just wouldn't lose. He just would not lose. And he would do anything in his power to win that day. And the flu game is proof of that. And the legend of Michael Jordan grows bigger by the year. And as we sit on the helm of Space Jam 2, knowing that that's about to happen, it will never live up to Space Jam 1, no matter what happens, because the legend of LeBron will never be as big as the legend of Michael Jordan. And it's Michael Jordan, first team shooting guard, and to me, the greatest player that ever walked the face of the earth.
Jay,
I everything he just said is true, but I want to point out something, Mike. I recently went back and watched Space Jam at the request of my son, and it is terrible.
Oh, it's not good.
It is terrible. So LeBron might be able to do a better movie than him, but I think we can all agree that he will never be a greater player than Jordan. I will say, I kind of wish that my memory of Jordan ended in 98 when he hit that shot against Utah and he didn't come back for the Wizards.
He wasn't a mess for the Wizards. He wasn't great. He wasn't the same level he was with the Bulls. He was not a mess.
I think maybe because it was my, you know, I was in middle school and high school and I was more in tune with it, and just watching him play, it just wasn't the same. And I just wish that my memory would have ended with Jordan against Utah hitting that ridiculous shot that he hit and then retiring and be done with it.
And clearly pushed off of Byron Russell.
Okay, let's not talk about that.
Wait, are you guys saying that Jordan played for the Wizards? What are you guys talking about? I forgot about that.
No, Nick Batum, sorry.
All right, well, anybody who's listened to this show before knows that anytime I get an opportunity to stump for Michael Jordan, I'm going to do that. And for me, it always comes down to when I watched Michael Jordan play and there was 4 minutes left in a game and it was close, I just never had a doubt that Jordan was going to figure out a way to win that game. And anytime he went into a big stage, I felt like he was going to figure out whatever it was going to take, he was going to do. And as he went on in his career, he realized that there were times where he had to pass the ball. And you think about the shots that Steve Kerr made and that John Paxson made that helped seal championships. And yet those were plays that were completely created by Michael. And we know that his competitiveness is unrivaled, I think, probably in any sport. I don't know that there's ever been a guy that's been as much of an assassin on the floor as Jordan was. I think he would do anything that it would have taken in order for his team to win games. You know, we could go through the stat line. I think, Dan, you mentioned it, that not only was he tremendous on offense, but he was a 9-time first-team All-NBA defensive player. And he played both ends of the floor. He played almost every game, year in and year out, except for the year that he broke his foot. He just was dominant in every aspect of basketball that you could want a guy to be dominant. We talked a little bit earlier about how guys would translate from era to era. And if you look at Jordan's statistics and then you look at the statistics of modern players, and this goes back to the Daryl Morey, James Harden's a better scorer than Jordan. And I think if you put Jordan in today's game, he figures out that, hey, I got to shoot threes. And do any of us have any doubt that he would have been one of the best 3-point shooters in the league if that was something that the game would have required of him? I don't have any doubt that he would have maniacally been in the gym developing a 3-pointer if he felt that that was something that was necessary in order for him to achieve whatever it is that.
And then he would have won the 3-point contest and the dunk contest in the same year. Yeah. That would be impressive.
I mean, there's just nobody better. I just don't think that even if you find somebody, like, again, let's say that we're making the argument that LeBron is better than Jordan, and you can make the argument that LeBron athletically is on par with Jordan. You can make the case that LeBron has a skill set that is similar to, if not equal to, Jordan. But to me, what sets him apart from anybody who's ever played and is just the competitiveness and the sheer will to win. And I don't know that exists anymore anywhere in the league, because all these guys are friends. I mean, Jordan was not friends with guys on other teams, maybe only to kind of get under their skin. There's the famous, you know, Barkley took him out golfing and, you know, drinking and whatever before games, and, you know, kind of was talking to him and trying to gain an advantage. And then
Jordan watched Barkley swing a golf club, and right. And he realized this guy's not athletic.
That's right. So I just think that type of competitiveness, I just don't know if we ever see that again. We see guys maybe who are as talented athletically, but Jordan to me just is, I mean, he's hands down the greatest player who ever lived, from a skill set standpoint, from a competitiveness standpoint, from a guy who you could count on to come through in big moments. There's never been anybody like him. And I find it hard to believe that anybody's ever going to surpass what he's been able to do out on the basketball floor.
Agree.
100%, man.
All right. So we're unanimous 2 for 2 so far. All right. Small forward. I think we're going to go unanimous here too. Small forward. Dan, we'll start with you.
All right. It's LeBron, right?
LeBron.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
So you could point to a lot of different LeBron things to make your reason. I will point to this one. And it's what he did in the 2017-2018 playoffs with that carcass of a Cavs team. I mean, that team was rancid. And he dragged that carcass of a team and had the greatest playoff stretch I have ever watched anyone had in their lives. 34 points, 9.1 rebounds, 9 assists, a block a game, and a steal and a half, playing 41.9 minutes, so almost 42 minutes a night, on a Cavs team where his second best player on a given night could have been anybody from Kevin Love to Kyle Korver to Jeff Green. That's the team that he dragged to the finals. And you can point to the other injuries that took place across the conference, and I'll listen to that one, but that was the single-handed greatest playoff performance I had ever watched in my life. He was must-see TV for a month and a half. And you can point to the regular season stuff all you want. I will point to this one. It's LeBron, and he's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt in my mind LeBron is the choice here. And the fact that, you know, I think I've probably used that exact terminology, the carcass of that Cavs team. We've talked about this at length on the podcast before. That team was terrible. They had no business being in the finals. And when they got to the finals, I was optimistic they were going to win a game. Obviously, that didn't happen. I just thought the NBA would rig it, so they would have one game. And we talked about that at the podcast. Yeah. That was the first podcast we did, Mike. I said
they rigged it. They rigged it the other way. They rigged it the other way with the charge. That's how it got rigged. It got rigged the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So you still to this day see Tony Brothers and Ken Maurer and those guys, and immediately are just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, here we go.
Well, I don't really think
my daughter hates Ken Maurer. Anytime she sees him on TV, she's like, Ken Maurer, I hate that guy.
Hey, listen, he does a nice job slicking that hair back before every game. So it's
him and Pat Riley, man. The two of them are pulling it.
He's keeping the gel companies in business.
Yeah, but anyways.
Slick Rick.
Anyways.
Slick Rick Pitino.
Yeah. And there's no doubt in my mind LeBron is the best small forward of all time. And I think this what's interesting now, Mike, is, and I don't really want to spend a lot of time on what's going to happen this year, but now with everything that's going on, I think he's going to be under the eight ball to perform really at a high level this year. And I think he's going to, because everyone's doubting him and people are calling him out. And I think we might get another 2017 playoff run, but it might last the whole season if he can sustain it with his health. And that's obviously the big question mark now going forward, because we've never seen a guy play this many minutes in this shorter time.
Yeah. There's a lot of miles on those tires. I wonder, and I'm going to cross sports on you, I wonder if this is going to turn into the first Favre Viking season where he was just so mad at the entire world for what took place that he basically threw the clock back and just looked like the Brett Favre that I grew up watching in Green Bay for years.
Dan's a Green Bay fan.
And I wonder if you're going to see that out of LeBron, where he's just going to be so aggravated at everything that took place that he's just going to turn the clock back. And I wonder if his turn the clock back is actually going to be making Anthony Davis the greatest player on the face of the planet and him turning into Magic and just saying, I'm going to run the point guard spot. I'm going to dish. I'm going to distribute. I'll make a couple buckets when we need it. My goal is to average 20, 10, and 7, and we'll figure the rest out from there. And Anthony Davis is your MVP. I wonder if that could happen.
See, I don't think so, because I don't think LeBron – I know that his MO is make the right basketball play, and obviously he plays the game very unselfishly. But in all the time that we've seen him, whether it was here in Cleveland or even when he was in Miami, I don't think he's ever done a very good job of deferring or wanting to give credit to anyone else for what happens. And rightly so. When you're the best guy, when you're the best guy, you want things to go through you, and the majority of things should go through you. So I'm not sure. I'm interested to see what that dynamic looks like on the Lakers this year. I think probably they would be best served by him evolving and becoming more like a Magic Johnson, where he's scoring 20 a game and really focusing on getting the ball to Davis in his spots and throwing up a 12 assists every night. I just don't know if that's the way he's wired. And it'll be interesting to see as he ages whether or not that becomes a factor. Now, whether or not he's going to have a great season, I think if you look at the fact that in the last calendar year, he's played like 55 games compared to other years where he's gone on all of his finals runs. So he's playing 100-plus games. Then several of those years, he's playing in an Olympics or he's playing in a world championship and adding even more minutes, games onto what he's doing. So theoretically, he should be as fresh as he's been in a long, long time. Now, that could be offset by just the fact that he's getting older and Father Time eventually gets everybody.
He's filming Space Jam 2.
Yeah, he's filming Space Jam 2, so we don't know how much he's working on his game versus how much he's just playing against monsters all day. But regardless of that, it's going to be very interesting to see how he performs. If we look at this, though, from a historic standpoint, and I think that we're getting close to the territory where some people are starting to beat the drum for LeBron surpassing Jordan as the all-time best player. And so I just wanted to touch on that, share my thoughts there, and see if you guys have anything to add to it. And I guess the two things for me that separate Jordan and will always separate him, one is, I've already talked about it, I think from a sheer competitive will and coming through in big moments, I think that there's Jordan way at the top, and I don't think LeBron is anywhere near number two on that list of guys that I would want to take the last shot in a big game. Now, that's not to say LeBron hasn't made lots of big shots in his career, because to say he hasn't would be a disservice to him. But if I need a basket in the last 10 seconds of a game, I'd give the ball to Jordan every single time. And there's a bunch of guys that I'd give the ball to behind Jordan before I would give it to LeBron. And I don't care what anyone says. Being the best player on the floor, being the greatest player in the game, the ball should go through you and you should take the shot. A bad shot for your best player is better than a pretty good shot for your worst player, I think. And so that's one thing I think that separates Jordan from LeBron, and you'll never convince me otherwise. And then in LeBron's favor, the argument goes that just the sheer volume of statistics that he's going to have by the time he retires, and who knows when that's going to be, and who knows when he's going to start to slow down. But last year he put up, 27, 8, and 8, and, did it seemingly playing at three-quarter speed. And so can he continue to do that and amass statistics? It's going to make a pretty compelling argument, but I don't think if you watch both of those guys play, I just don't think that LeBron will ever surpass Jordan, at least not in my eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else you want me to toss in. Michael Jordan was the greatest player I ever saw in my life. LeBron's unbelievable. He's a joy to watch. He's all those things. Here's what I'd say. One, LeBron started when he was 18. Jordan started when he was 21. So there's 3 years out the window that he would have been able to play with. The second part of it being, if I'm not going to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole thing of what happened when he decided to play baseball.
David Stern didn't suspend him?
Well, there was some hit, nudge, nudge, and wink, wink going on there, and some unsavory folks knocking on the door once in a blue moon. But if that doesn't happen, you can guarantee that those Bulls teams, and I think it's one of the surest guarantees on the face of the earth of hypotheticals, that there's seven straight finals appearances for those Bulls teams. I think you pretty much locked that.
I mean, they were playoff teams, right? Even when he was not there. I mean,
right. I mean, the only time he ever lost in the playoffs was to Penny Hardaway and Shaq. And
was it Little Penny there?
Yeah, the first year he came, when he came back in the middle of the year or towards the end of the year.
I will not listen to you besmirch Penny Hardaway in my presence.
I'm with
favorite
you.
Favorite player as a kid. I love Penny. He's the greatest what if.
Well, I agree. I agree. That guy was so athletic. He was such a great passer. He was unbelievable. I agree. Him and Grant Hill are probably the two guys that I look at in my lifetime as being like, man, what they could have been.
But yeah, I mean, that's the only time he ever lost in a playoff series. You know, went during the streak, that is, during the big run that he was on. The only time he ever lost is when he came back midway through the season and then lost to that Magic team.
Yep.
And so he was just unbelievable. I would take Jordan in a heartbeat to take the final shot in any game. Absolutely. I didn't even think I'd think about it.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. All right, Jay, anything else, or we want to move on?
No, I'm good. We can move on.
All right, let's move on. All right, power forward.
I cheated. I'm going to openly admit it.
All right. Well, it depends on positionally how we define it. Dan, go ahead. Who do you got?
I put Bill Russell there.
I put Bill Russell there as well.
All right. So
he's 6'10", so in today's NBA, he might be a power forward.
All right, so I went – well, I mean, again, it depends on how you define this guy as a power forward, but I went with somebody who is at least perceived as a power forward. I went with Tim Duncan. So I tried to stay positionally with that first team. I think if you look at guys who – and Duncan played a lot of center, let's not kid ourselves, over the course of his career – but he was always listed as a power forward. He typically had somebody on the Spurs that may have started nominally as a center, even though Duncan was playing half or more of his minutes at center. But you look at what Duncan was able to do over the course of his career, win five titles, was the key to the Spurs dynasty. And I just think that if you look at all the power forwards that are out there and you try to narrow it and keep it there, I think Duncan deserves to be there as your first team power forward. Now, I can't argue with if we want to slide guys into other slots that Russell fits in that particular position. I don't have an argument with that, but I do think if you look at what Duncan was able to do over the course of his career, that he could definitely be in that number one spot as a power forward. So I'll let you guys go ahead and talk Russell, and I'll just kind of sit back and listen.
All right, so I got to throw this out first. So I threw out an email to a buddy of mine with this list that I did and said, who am I missing, who's an NBA historian, to state the least. And in the email I sent him, I put on here Bill Russell, and I put in parentheses, Tim Duncan, if I get called out for not making Russell be a for cheating.
All right,
that's
so
exactly what I wrote. So spoiler, Timmy's my second team power forward. So we'll drool about Tim Duncan in a minute. So here's the Bill Russell reason. I think in today's NBA, he would be considered a power forward playing at 6'10", and the style that he did play. And the fact being, look, he's Bill Russell. We can all point to the rings. We can all point to everything else. Here's the thing that I just cannot get past for the life of me. 23 rebounds a season. In his career, he averaged 22.5 rebounds per game, 15.1 points. This was before they started keeping track of blocks. This is the biggest thing that Bill Russell did that still sticks with me. I never saw anybody in my life until I saw Bill Russell who used to block shots into Bob Cousy's hands or into John Havlicek's hands so that they could get up the floor to get the shot. And that was the one thing that Russell was so good at that I still haven't seen anybody be able to copy and still haven't seen anybody be able to do, because everybody loves to have the row F block where you spike it like you're on a beach volleyball team. Here's a guy in Russell who was like, no, that's a turnover if we do that. I'm going to block this into a position where we can get the fast break. And I'm going to block this into a position where we can get ourselves into our offense and get some easy buckets. And it's all the leadership stuff. It's the defensive stuff. It's the block shots. It's the rebounds. It's all the grunt work. It's Bill freaking Russell. He's unbelievable. and he's arguably the greatest player we've ever seen in our life. To me, he's top five in the greatest player conversations. And yeah, he's got to be first team. And if I can't use him as a power forward, there's going to be some weaseling later on.
Well, so here's my thing. He won 11 championships.
That's probably the number one stat
to pull out is that
he won 11
titles in 13.
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. I mean, I don't think you were alive either, but maybe you were. But didn't he coach three of those years while he was playing?
Yes, he did.
So absolutely. The fact that he played for eight teams and then he coached and played on three of those other teams and won 11. I mean, that's just that's to me, and the fact that Dan, you mentioned 22.5 rebounds per game.
It's asinine.
in a career. It's ridiculous. It's amazing. And so I had to put him there. I had some. We'll talk about Duncan. We'll talk about Duncan in a minute because I was tempted to put Duncan there, but I couldn't do it over Russell. I don't know. That was just my view on it.
All right. So, spoiler alert: if we end up at the end here, if we're still all awake, if we do this at the end and we put a player ranking and we eliminate positionally, then for me, I think Russell jumps up there into the top five. I don't think there's any doubt. But looking at it positionally, I just felt like you got to reward the things that Duncan did. And you guys mentioned everything that you would want to say about Russell. Dan talking about his defensive prowess and the way he blocked shots and was able to use that to generate the Celtics' fast break was unlike any other player who's ever played the game. You watch Bill Russell highlights and you just watch him flying up and down the court, both offensively and defensively, just at a level of speed that other guys just didn't have. And we're talking about guys who were 6 or 8 inches smaller than him, that he was easily outrunning. He was a great athlete. Just like we talked about earlier with Wilt or any of these guys, I think there's guys clearly like Wilt and Russell that would translate to any era. Their athleticism. Now, maybe Bill Russell couldn't have played center. Maybe he couldn't have, you know, pounded around with Shaq, but he would have figured out a way to play against today's players. And he would have figured it out because he was a guy that was all about winning. I got one more stat for Russell that I'm going to save for the next position here when we get to the centers that I want to talk about when we get to that spot. So anything else on the power forwards? I think you can make a case. I don't think if we're looking at the top three teams here, Duncan is clearly on one of those teams and Russell clearly has a spot on one of those three teams, depending on how we positionally slot all of them.
Yep. I'm good.
All right. Center. Man, we talked about this before we jumped on. The center position is the one that you start looking at the list of guys who are all-time greats. And when you're trying to put together three teams, and if you're going to limit yourself to three true centers, the guys who get snubbed is a pretty impressive list. So, Dan, who's your first team all-time NBA center?
For me, it's Wilt.
I have Wilt as well.
Wow. I have Wilt too.
Okay. For what he was able to accomplish in a career and that stuff, like, you know, he was always kind of, you know, and I think some of it is, of course, the bias that, you know, I have in that stuff of course, reading the Book of Basketball and hearing Bill Simmons slander him and all that kind of stuff. And you read other things with Wilt too, and you read about different stuff where he'd say, like, okay, this season I'm going to lead the league in points. Okay, now I'm going to lead the league in assists. Right. Okay, now I can lead the league in rebounds. Like, he never truly, you know, put it all together, but he was so dominant and he was so unbelievable. And he was just like, you watched him on the screen. And even when he was older, he was just better than everybody else who was on the floor. And I don't know of a better way to put it. Sure, his defense led something behind, but you know what also helped? His offense being unbelievable and averaging 23 rebounds a game also helped the cause. I mean, he's Wilt Chamberlain. I don't know what else to add in there. He
had a lot of lady friends.
Wow, I was going to – look, I was told to behave myself on this podcast. I already cursed. I'm not going down that rabbit hole. That's on you.
No, so
let's leave that as an aside.
I mean,
Listen, he had 100 points in a game.
He scored 100 points in a game, even though we have no evidence of this actually
happened. Hey, and you know where it happened?
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
He probably ate lots of chocolate beforehand and then scored 100 points.
In 1961-62 season, the guy averaged 50.4 points in a season. That's insane.
So that to me, when people ask me about, will the 50-point, like the 100-point game, as crazy as it sounds, like I understand it in the sense of they just kept giving him the ball. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's faster than everybody else. They kept fouling him. That night he went 28 for 32 from the line. Like, I get how you get to 100 points one time. I actually, that to me makes sense. Averaging 50 in a season, and I don't care what the pace was or how many shots are being taken or whatever, but when you average 50, that means you have a bad game and you have 30, which a lot of years leads the NBA in scoring. So I get 30. The next game, in order to keep my average, I got to get 70. That is insane. I mean, that is absolutely insane. And I think when you look at the NBA record book and the fact that Wilt retired however many years ago in, you know, the early 70s, so he's been retired 40 years, and his name is still just completely all over the NBA record book. And the argument, obviously, for Russell over Wilt is the winning, and that Wilt only won two titles, and that so often when Wilt and Russell went against each other, that Russell's teams ended up coming out on top. And winning counts. I mean, there's no doubt that players are judged by winning, but Wilt won two rings, and so it wasn't like he was a player who retired without ever having a championship. And something that I read today that I found to be interesting, and I think it speaks to what was going on at that time, and you look at the All-NBA teams, Bill Russell, All-NBA first team 3 times, All-NBA second team 8 times, okay? Wilt Chamberlain, All-NBA first team 7 times, All-NBA second team 3 times. So for the most part, their two careers overlapped. And so I'm guessing that a lot of the times when Wilt was first team, the guy he was beating out, who was the second team player, was Bill Russell, which means that the writers or whoever was watching at that time believed that despite maybe Russell's teams winning, that Wilt was the better player. And I just, to me, Wilt's always larger than life. The stories, when you watch him play, when you watch his highlights, Dan, you said it earlier, that he just looks bigger. He just looks faster. He just looks stronger. I watched some highlights today of him just as a track athlete doing high jump and long jump. And I mean, this is like a guy who's 7'2", and he just looks like a 6'2" athlete that's doing all these crazy things. They actually had an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger on there talking about when he would work out with Andre the Giant and Wilt Chamberlain. He goes, yeah, Wilt was the strongest. He was the strongest of the three of us. He would just pick me up with one hand and like carry me around. And you hear all kinds of those stories about Wilt from people that were around him, that just, that he was an amazing athlete that was way ahead of his time. And I think if you look at all these guys from the past, of any of them, Wilt to me stands out as the guy that you could put him in any era of basketball and he would be the same type of dominant player. Now, obviously, today's game has changed, but I still think you put Wilt out there, and just like Jordan figured it out, Wilt would figure out what he needed to do because he was just such a tremendous athlete. And so I just look at the sheer numbers tell you that Wilt has to be, he has to be the first team all-time center.
Agreement here.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I would point out as well with Wilt that always blew me away is we covered it. He looks like an alien on the floor. Like, that's the only way you could describe it. He just looks like he doesn't belong. And he 100% would figure out how to play in any era. He was so unbelievably talented, and he was so good, and he could just evolve his game into whatever it needed to be. Yeah, he's 1-1 on the center list, He's first team All-NBA.
Yeah, he was way ahead of his time. He was way ahead of his time. He would have been, I think, of any guy to put in a time machine, it would have been great to be able to either A, go back in a time machine and watch him play in the early 60s when he was at his athletic peak, or B, put him in the time machine and bring 1962 Wilt Chamberlain to the NBA today and see what he would have been able to do. So,
what I was going to say. I forgot. Yeah, okay, yeah, I lost my train of thought. Here we go.
All right.
The cult of Wilt Chamberlain is the other part of this that's unbelievable. Anybody who watched Wilt play will not only tell you about watching Wilt play, but will talk about him like he is a Greek god amongst us. And I mean, that's the thing, that the cult of Wilt Chamberlain is like something that we have never witnessed in our lives. You know, it's insane. Like, you'll talk to some of these people who some way, shape, or form saw Wilt play, and especially in the early days, because everybody sees the footage of him with the Lakers where he's got the headband on and the pot belly, and it's like, okay, wait a minute, this guy doesn't belong here. But to see him in his peak, there is a cult following of people, and I'm sure you'll hear about it off this podcast, who are like, I saw Wilt play in 1965, and let me tell you, nobody touched that dude even today. Like, it's almost like hearing about Bigfoot or Paul Bunyan or Hercules. Like, the stories of Wilt Chamberlain fall right into that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Just like I said, listening to Arnold Schwarzenegger talk on this video, the highlight video that I watched today, you could just tell that he's like, this guy is just a freak athlete. There's never been anyone like him. And as we've said a bunch of times, he would translate to any era. He'd figure it out. Team two. So we got our first five. Let's go to our second.
We were in agreement on 4 out of 5, Mike. That's 4 out of 5. Kind of scary.
Well, we really only had, if you figure we had 15 total slots, right? So each of us had 5. There was really only disagreement on one of those 15 slots. So me putting Duncan in as a power forward is the only one where we didn't have a unanimous decision. So that's pretty good. Pretty good. Speaks pretty highly of all those guys that were on the first team.
Thanks for listening to part one of our discussion on all-time All-NBA teams. We will release part two of our episode tomorrow. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at HoopHeadsPod, or you can follow Dan Menigan at TheSportsFeller.
Thanks for listening to the HoopHeads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.